dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, Shane Combs and Matt Combs.
Hello, SVC fans, and welcome to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk podcast show. Show number three here in season three, and obviously a special thanks goes out to Triple Crown and the Family Fun Center people out there off Bridge Street. Super place. You want to get your family out there, check it out. A great time for kids and some different parties and different outings and really soccer leagues of all ages and just a lot of different things going out there. Make sure you check them out and thank them for helping us promote SVC Sports the way we've been able to here on the podcast show. I'm joined again this week by my brother Matt and our good friend Jeremy Ward. And guys, we have a potential to have one of the best shows we've ever had. Real excited about the agenda. Now, Matt, let me start with you as I say welcome here. What excites you on this week's agenda?
Well, I think we have a couple real good points to talk about. I think we're building off some of the stuff we talked about last week, and then obviously some new stuff too. And I really thought we had a couple excellent calls and that I know you'll get to and inbox stuff. So it's nice to see the SVC people wanting to contribute to the show and wanting to get involved, and that's really what makes the show good.
You know, Jeremy, you and I talk a lot, obviously, away from the show, just about sports around the SVC and different athletes in general. A lot of the things we were hoping we would get feedback from the fans on, as well as some of the different things that we've been able to get out on the website this week. We've been successful in all those areas. What are some things you're looking forward to tonight?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is just the feedback and how excited, I am that – to get fans involved. And I had a couple really good conversations with people at volleyball games and football games this week, and heard some opinions, and just getting great information that we can share, and the more we can get the fans involved in the show and let them really drive the show, I think the better it's going to be.
Well, we do have a great show. Looking down the agenda here, we talk football, volleyball, golf, cross-country, soccer, and even take a peek ahead to basketball. But first, we start with incredible feedback from a discussion that started last week on the show and is really a discussion that the entire league, be it fans, coaches, parents, and administration, should all get involved. Well, fans, on the volleyball side, I know one thing we've been able to get out on the website for the first time here in 2013 is our volleyball SVC leaders in terms of our categories. I look down through here. I see a Kirsten Dawson, Haley Carl, Aaliyah Pelfrey, Elena Lytle, Taylor Overly, Taylor Baker, Jillian Pontius, and obviously much, much more. That's our Dena Sports Medicine SVC stats. Listening to your coach is one thing. Listening to your pain is everything. Make sure you check out Adena Sports Medicine. You can request an appointment with Adena Sports Medicine online at adena.org or call 740-779-4598. So obviously appreciate Adena, and that stats page is a lot of fun to update each week and just kind of follow how the individuals stack up. Well, guys, obviously the lead of the show tonight has to be the great discussion from last week. Fans, if you missed it, we had a phone call. In fact, Bruce, would we be able to play that call again?
I had a question for SEC Sports Zone podcast. As a parent of a JV player, I have a concern about, especially during basketball and football, girls basketball, boys football, that numbers are dwindling and some games are not being played or only two quarters are being played. What can the league do to fix this problem? Thank you.
Well, Bruce, I appreciate you getting that call back. The reason I wanted to do that is in case we had some fans joining us this week, just to kind of catch them up. So what happened on last week's show, and you can go back to the DBK website and look back at SVC Sports Talk and listen to any of our past shows. And what you'll hear in that particular conversation was we were talking about how some of the problems with the numbers starts down in the Little League area. And then we started to say, well, we obviously know what the problem is, but is there any solution that we can attack right away to get this thing solved as quickly as possible? Guys, I had a couple things in the inbox here. One was mentioning that a lot of schools have gone to pay to play, and it's talking about how when families have to pay sport after sport, that a lot of times maybe instead of getting that three sport athlete, maybe you only get a two sport athlete, or it cuts the cost a little bit. It's talking about maybe finding some other ways to pay, and it talked about how, you know, we as much as we hit on Little Leagues are rich because they kind of fund themselves and they can do their own concessions and own gate. What's your take, Jeremy, on the pay to play that a lot of schools have had to go to? Is it just a sign of the times, or is there some more creative ways we could fund that might end up helping our numbers?
Well, honestly, as you look around our area and surrounding areas, if you do not have pay to play, nowadays you're really in the minority. Some places it's hundreds of dollars a sport. Other places it's more of a, you know, a travel expense of bus fees, things like that, transportation costs, which I think that's a good way to handle it. For the majority of sports, that's really the burden that's placed on the schools outside football and boys basketball and girls basketball. Some places is the ability to pay for the bus drivers and the cost of the bus to get you from one place to the next. And that's much more reasonable than $300, $400, $500, $600 a sport like it is in most of the larger districts in Central Ohio.
Well, that's a great point, because you're using terms like transportation and things like that. I know a lot of schools have wanted to be real careful about the pay-to-play terminology. Some people call it the participation fee. Some people do call it a transportation fee. Some schools are as low as maybe a $30 per sport. I know, like you said, some are getting up into the hundreds. I know some sports, I want to say like Huntington is one school in our league that does not have a fee at this point. Matt, you can give us an outside the league perspective. I know with you being down at Vinton County, obviously we're not dealing with the richest school district when we talk Vinton County, but what's some of your take on the pay to play? Is it something Vinton County's had to go to, or where do you guys stand on that?
No, we haven't had to go to that, and thank goodness really for us, because the community we live in down there, we would have a lot of kids that would have a hard time with that, a lot of families. You know, I'm afraid that would really exclude some kids from participating.
Quick, let me interrupt you. Do you think that's hurt the numbers then? Do you think this is a legitimate concern then, the pay-to-play? Do you think it has hurt numbers in the SVC?
Oh, I mean, it can't help. You know, right. If there's money that has to come out of your own pocket for your son or daughter to play, it's bound to affect a few, or like you said, maybe affect you playing multiple sports. So, right. You know, we've been able at Vinton County to budget our money pretty well, I think, in our athletic department. And we've had cooperation. Jeremy mentioned transportation costs. See, every school handles that differently. You know, there are some schools that you have to basically pay by the mile, you know, almost to take athletic trips, and that'll break the bank pretty quick. Some schools like ours, you basically pay for your bus driver, which the cost stays a little bit lower. But yeah, the schools handle that differently. And transportation, especially with fuel costs nowadays and stuff, is a big, big issue in schools. And there's a lot of schools, for instance, that won't allow their teams to even travel X number of miles. You know, they're starting to set limits. Yeah, like we got to keep everything within a 50-mile radius or something like that because of transportation costs. But, you know, we've been fortunate to be able to. And I think a lot of times, you know, too, it's how active are your booster clubs? You know, I know our booster clubs buy our uniforms. That's a huge, huge expense that falls off of the athletic department. You know, a lot of schools, the athletic department buys all the uniforms, you know. So is your booster club active? Are they really pitching in and doing their part? You know, and how do you budget your money? What kind of gates are you fortunate enough to get? I mean, some schools make a lot of money on football. We touched on that last week compared to others, and some of the junior high sports that some schools get a lot bigger gates than others. So there's a lot of things that come into play in terms of financial resources. But I do think pay to play is definitely a thing that could hinder numbers a little bit.
Well, Matt, since you brought that up, I think I'll go here in the inbox, and I apologize. There's no way we're going to get to all of them here. We had about four or five pretty solid emails, but we definitely have a phone call we want to get to here in just a little bit. But I do want to get to the inbox one more time. And Matt, since you kind of touched on it, let's go with this one. It's a good point on the gate that we were talking about last week, this email says. And he went on to say how the enrollment at different schools is obviously bringing in more money. It was making the analogy of if you have 12, 13, 14 kids on both junior high teams, compared to another school which has six or seven, obviously your gate, when grandparents and aunts and uncles and friends are coming, it went on to say, you know, you could be looking at a double the size of gate. Jeremy, I'll throw this at you because I know you're getting into some of the junior high AD stuff. Who's making decisions on this money? How much freedom do you have? Because I know treasurers are getting pressured from the administration. Hey, keep us in budget. Well, then you're trying to help your coaches. Obviously, the coaches are trying to help the kid. Where does the balance come from, and how hard is the balance to make it work financially?
Well, I think it's a very tricky scenario. And being involved in various school systems, as I've had I don't know if you'd say the luxury of having or not, but nonetheless, I've worked for three very, very different school districts, and the way they handled money, athletics, and really oversight on part of the treasurer's department has varied. And I can say that, you know, in the past 5 years or so, things have changed dramatically, and, you know, laws and things dealing with the treasurer's department and accountability, it really makes it difficult, really, for anybody below the administrative level to have, you know, a whole lot to do with it, just, you know, for the safety and security. And I think that's a good thing. I mean, I think it's important that, you know, that there's a large amount of oversight and a lot of protection. I mean, you certainly don't want to be put in the position as individuals, and I know that it's happened a lot in, you know, Hilliard, Dublin, where they have large tournament accounts, and they've ended up, a lot of people losing their job because, you know, they don't have that oversight. And there's got to be somebody in control of that money and know where it's going, and kind of have an idea of what it's going to be used for, and spreading the wealth, so to speak, for the sports that, you know, aren't pulling money in at the gate.
Well, let me be the first to be honest here, and then I'll throw it to either one of you or both of you here and see how honest you want to be. I've been an AD, and I've been a coach, and I can tell you right now that your perspective changes in a hurry. You know, we talked about scheduling last week. As a coach, when I start to look at scheduling, I have different things in mind for the good of my team, for the good, if I'm going to have an older team, a younger team, where I stack in the league, am I up toward the top, am I down toward the bottom, and that kind of all dictates. And that, we talked about distance, depending on what sectional draw I'm in, do I want to go east, do I want to go west, do I want to play a variety of teams? Well, when you're an athletic director, all of a sudden now you're getting pressured from some different angles. You do start to look a little bit more at gate and who we're playing and how that all goes. Matt, I'll start with you there, because now it's been interesting to talk sports with you since you've also become an athletic director after being a very successful coach for about a decade now. How much difficulty have you had in balancing the two?
I think it does open your eyes to some other issues, you know, when you get on the administrative side of things a little bit. But I think you know, we talk to our coaches about, let's really be wise in things such as scrimmages. You know, when we scrimmage, let's at least try to keep our scrimmages close to home if we can, not go all over the place for our scrimmages. You know, we know in the regular season we can't always control, you know, the travel. I mean, we have to play games sometimes, especially in our case. You know, we have a smaller league of only six teams, so you've got more non-league games that you have to schedule. And, you know, being a little bit bigger school, you have a hard time finding, you know, people that want to play in certain sports.
Right.
So your travel increases. I really think the SVC, and this goes to that whole other issue we talked about, of should our league expand, should it, you know, the SVC has a really good setup, in my opinion, right now, financially. I mean, most of these teams don't have to travel very far. You look at like a football schedule, SVC teams only schedule three non-league games. as opposed to a lot of leagues like ours, you play five non-league games.
Right.
Basketball, same way. You've got less non-league games involved there because your league schedule is already set for you. And let's face it, most of the teams in this league, you know, can get to each other in a matter of, you know, 20, 30 minutes, with the exception of a couple trips. So, you know, it really helps. I think it should help, I would imagine, financially for some of these schools to be so close geographically in proximity. But I do think that it's something that you have to consider a little bit, the scheduling and the little thing. I know a lot of schools, for instance, they don't want to just send their freshman basketball team to go play a game. You know, they feel like we don't want to send a bus just for that. We need to make sure that if we're going to send our teams, we're getting two or three games in on the same nights. Or like in our league, we combine on our volleyball. We send middle school volleyball and varsity volleyball on the same bus, and they play at the same site on the same night. I know a lot of schools don't do that. So like if we would travel to Nelsonville, we'd be playing a varsity volleyball game and a middle school volleyball game at the exact same time. Some things like that, maybe, that cut down on some costs. So I think, you know, these things can be done, but you really have to be creative and put your mind to it and as a league, come up with what best fits your league.
And that's, let me jump in here real quick. It's an interesting point because obviously, you know, I've been in a couple of different scenarios, and when the league chooses to schedule lower level junior high events the same night as the varsity contest in order to combine busing, which is why that was done. You know, does that cost offset what the money that you would lose in the gate because your junior high kids don't get to come to varsity games? I mean, even home games, they don't have the opportunity.
Right.
To go to both. You know, do you think that it actually, you know, you would make enough money by splitting those dates to offset the busing cost? And I don't know the answer to that.
It probably depend on the school and the program and that type of thing and the enjoyment of that sport. Jeremy, real quick, let me ask you, because I get this as a baseball coach, and from you being a former baseball coach, the first thing you hear in baseball a lot of times is, well, we lose money on baseball. Well, that doesn't mean our sport's still not important. You know, the coaches work really hard at it. I have 20, 25 kids that come out in the heat. And, you know, when we're allowed to have our coaching days, we're out there hitting 100, 150, 200 fly balls, ground balls. They're working just as hard. Now that you're an AD, have you been able to separate that, or do you still kind of in the back of your mind know what it's like to be a coach and try to balance that a little bit?
No, I definitely try to draw on experiences, and you know, I've had I've worked with a lot of different administrators and a lot of different mindsets. Some that would support you, you know, as long as you had some justification for what you wanted to do. But you know, some people, especially when you get to the springtime, sometimes they budget from fall to spring, not sport by sport. And if you run out of money by the time baseball and softball comes, then you may not be making a few of those trips, or you might not be getting that extra bucket of balls. And I've been in that situation too. So it's really the mindset of your athletic department and of your administrators.
Sure. Well, guys, I'll tell you what, following last week's show, we had one of the better calls that we've ever had here on SVC Sports Talk, as the caller is offering a solution to the problem.
I wanted to touch on a subject that you discussed last week as it pertains to the junior high level. Having coached the last couple of years at Edina, I wondered what changes could be made to fix some of the numbers problems in scheduling, being that most sixth graders are already playing club sports and they are now considered middle school students. I thought about going with a middle school varsity and JV program. We all know that some sixth and seventh graders are mature enough to play at the eighth grade level, so why not change the times? The smaller or less aggressive eighth graders could still compete with the younger kids to get some game competition, and the numbers would help fill rosters that would help with scheduling. I think we can all agree that the development at this level is what pushes our high school programs, and I think this is one way to increase that development. If you think that this is discussion worthy, I would love to hear your opinions on why this would or could not work. Thanks.
Well, first of all, what a great call. And here's what I love about it, first of all, and you can tell just by listening to the presentation that this is someone who has been involved in coaching, because one of the pet peeves in coaching is when you get people who want to complain, but then you ask them, well, what's your solution? And they don't know. You know, they'll come to you and say, that's stupid. And you say, okay, well, what would you like to see done? I don't know, but it's stupid. You know, so it's one of those things where at least here is something that's being thrown out as a possible solution. So like it or not, I think it's definitely, as the caller says, discussion worthy. And guys, I want to throw out a couple things right off the bat. Let's take the OHSAA and some of the other rules out of the equation here for a minute, okay? So here early on, let's just completely take the guidelines out of the equation. Speaking strictly from a varsity coach's standpoint and knowing what we know needs to happen in the middle school setting, good idea, bad idea, why? Go ahead and go, Matt.
I love the idea. I'll be honest with you. I think this guy really came up with a decent proposal here. I like guys that think outside of the box. I mean, I don't think this is a problem that can be solved with just traditional thinking. We have to be creative. I think if you took the entire pool of junior high kids, and I know in this call, I think if I understand him correctly, he's even wanting to include sixth grade. Okay, so
that's the way I took it, because he was referring to how a lot of the schools have your middle school set up now. Yeah,
right. So I mean, if you had three grades, if you're, again, we'll get into some other things, but you're taking the rules and all that out of it right now. We're just strictly talking theoretically here. If you had three grades to choose from, and you ran it that way, where you didn't necessarily have a sixth grade team, a seventh grade team, an eighth grade team, you just had a quote unquote varsity team, and then a development level, whether you wanted to call that junior varsity or whatever, I think it'd be a great idea, because kids at that age, anyone who's taught junior high, which I had the absolute pleasure of doing for a couple years, you'll get kids in junior high that are 6'1" with, you know, growing a beard, and kids that haven't even hit puberty yet. You get a wide range of physical capabilities, regardless of what grade they're in. And I do think it would help some kids to play at the level where they can be more competitive at. You already see some of that happening. Sure. Occasionally in junior high, I know, like, you'll see seventh grade football teams not have enough numbers, and a lot of times they'll play a couple eighth graders that have never played football before or are a little bit underdeveloped size-wise just right to fill out their roster. Or you'll occasionally see a good seventh grade basketball player move up and play eighth. So you see a little bit of that right now, but I think it would be great, because you may be able to not to cut as many kids, truthfully, and get more kids involved and give some of the kids that are late bloomers, so to speak, a chance to develop a little bit.
Jeremy, go ahead. Jump in there.
I think the other thing, I really like the idea of, you know, opening it up as a middle school for two reasons. Number one, I've never understood why you have to play in isolation in seventh and eighth grade. And I know most schools will allow you to play up, play 11th, seventh graders play up. And a lot of times in football, they make agreements so that you can play some eighth graders that don't get to play as much or that aren't ready to play at that level to play down. But I mean, you don't do that in high school. Freshmen are allowed to play. You know, that's not a rule. Freshmen can play against seniors, and I'd say there's a lot larger disparity in size, strength, and maturity from 9th sure to 12th grade than there is from 6th to 8th. The other part of that is the 6th graders, it's not like their youth programs, their 5th and 6th grade leagues, or their 6th grade teams are going away either. You still have that option. So you're not taking anything away. You're just opening things up, and I would even say for some of the bigger schools or a stronger program, if you're looking at, you know, whether it be football or volleyball or another sport, maybe that opens it up for you to have three teams and have an eighth grade team or an eighth grade level team and have two seventh
not
grade
lock it down to one grade, you're saying.
And in that way, you're not cutting kids. You're really increasing participation, and you've got that hierarchy. I mean, I know this is the case. For instance, there are larger schools, and now when we say larger, I'm talking about much larger high schools of thousands that have maybe two freshman teams.
Well, let me stop you there real quick. Couldn't at the middle school level, even a Zane Trace Uniota type, couldn't they benefit from that third team even in the middle school level?
I think that they could. I think we've all seen kids that were just, late bloomers, especially, taking basketball or baseball. Maybe they're just not big enough to really be effective at the junior high level. They lose that opportunity because they can't make a strong junior high team. And right. Then they're still playing varsity baseball or whatever it is. They're just a little bit behind because they kind of had that year where they were stuck in limbo because of their – physical development.
Well, guys, let's look at it from the other side here. We obviously like the idea enough to really engage in discussion. Now, obviously, there's some different things that go. I guess, Matt, when I first heard the call and I passed it on to you, I was asking you some different things. Like, we know in the high school rule that once you enter ninth grade, you're allowed 4 years of high school sports. And now in junior high, I've heard people say, well, does that same thing apply with two? Well, we know we've had some eighth graders repeat the grade. And they'll play a third year, but you were talking about how they're repeating the actual grade. So I guess my question, I'll start with you, Matt, because you're probably the most knowledgeable on this, but I know we need to probably research it even more. Do you see a hiccup at the OHSAA level? Would this have to be something that's more league adopted just for the good of maybe making it like a club sport setup? Or is this something that could probably sneak through under the current guidelines that the state makes us play under?
I don't think it would be able to go through, including sixth graders. I'd have to do some research, but I don't know.
I did look that up. It says specifically no students below seventh grade are allowed to participate.
Right, and that's kind of what I thought. And so, when you start getting into the sixth grade thing, you would have to have people. And this would take a large number of schools across an area to really petition the state to have them start to look at this. Can we, because a lot of the middle schools are 6th, 7th, and 8th grade now, right. Can we start to include 6th grade as a junior high level? Now, I don't think it would be impossible. I think the OHSA may very well be open to it, But there's a process there.
What happens with club sports? Like if you're not
club sports
under the OHSAA, really?
Yeah, I don't think that would matter.
If you wanted to do that, just say like if the league were going to adopt it, does that work, or is there still guidelines there that connect us to the state?
Well, I would think if you didn't have, you're talking maybe baseball, right? Because baseball's not a
that would be a great example to start with, just because it is club sport at most schools.
Right. The OHSAA really doesn't police that. If that would be an area you could certainly try it in, I think, and be fine with that. I think if the league or if enough leagues and enough schools wanted to petition the state and try to get sixth grade counted into middle school, since so many schools that are being built now, the new schools and stuff, are 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, it might be something they can pull off down the road.
Well, I think it's interesting, and there's one more point I want to touch on with both of you before we move on. It's kind of like we've ended up coming full circle here, because as we get into club sports, we start to look at funding it differently. A lot of schools aren't going to provide busing. If you think about what happens in little league sports, and this is kind of the way they do football nowadays, in the 4th, 5th, and 6th, they have a JV and a varsity football game on a Sunday afternoon or whatever. I know when my nephew plays, you go and they play the JV, then the varsity game. But there's no busing or anything like that. Game over at Edina today. And it's just like when you're in Little League, mom, dad, whoever takes you on out to the game and coach tells you what time to be there. So it goes back to the funding issue. Do you think the funding would be good or bad if the connection with the school left? Yes, you would lose busing. You might lose some uniform support, but at the same time, would you be able to make more money because of your ability to be creative? What's your guys' take there before we move on? Jeremy, go ahead and jump in there. What's your take on it becoming a club sport, breaking away from the schools financially?
Well, I could definitely see – I could see the advantages of that. Number one, it kind of relieves the school of a burden of those middle level sports. And, I think one thing from a mindset of the parents and the players that you run into at the junior high level already is that they go from playing on these travel teams, club teams, and even little league teams. You talk about them being rich. They're downgrading. Their equipment's not as nice. Their uniforms aren't as nice because the school can't provide what they put in. And like you said, a lot of that's the contribution. but I can tell you from my personal experience, when I was in high school for 2 years, my sophomore and junior year, I never took a bus to a golf match, never took a bus to a basketball game, and only a handful of baseball games. We did not have – we had very limited transportation, and we had pay to play, and it really didn't affect our – you know, our numbers. I think it's what you're used to. And I think all of this goes down to there was this established seventh grade, eighth grade, and this established, I think like Matt said earlier, you have to think out of the box. If you really want to solve the problem, you've got to look at it from, you know, a wider perspective.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
give us a final thought here before we move on. Cause real quick, I wanted to get your take on, again, what would be the advantage, disadvantage of us breaking away from the schools if we were going to try to implement something like this?
Well, I mean, Jeremy just touched on them. I mean, I think advantage wise, you do take a little bit of that burden off the school. The disadvantage is it could become a little bit of a renegade situation too. You know what I mean? I think, you know, you have, when you do have school teams, you are policed by the OHSAA. There are some rules and some regulations. Your coaches do have to abide by the rules the administration sets forth. You know, we've all seen situations where all of a sudden you've got an outside team and they just sort of run their own show and don't really care what the rules are. Now, if they're using your facilities as a school, you'd still have some right to say, you know, hey, we've got some basic guidelines we're going to go by. Let me say this, though, before we finish this topic. I think ultimately what this caller was saying, and I think what most of us agree on, the more kids we can get involved at a younger level, the better the situation is going to be at the high school level. We won't have some of those same problems where we don't have JV teams, maybe, you know, that so many of the schools have faced. And I think even without the whole sixth grade dynamic, you know, I still like this guy's idea. Even if we're the more traditional seventh and eighth grade, why do we have to be seventh and eighth grade? You know, why can't we move kids around a little bit in an effort to get more kids involved? I'll throw this idea out too. I just now thought about this as we were talking. I coached years ago back in the late 90s at a school called Alexander High School. Some people may have heard of it. Down in Albany, Ohio, at that time, and we're talking a school here the size maybe of like, I don't know, Southeastern, maybe a little bit smaller than that, probably a little smaller. I'd have to look at the enrollment numbers, but not a big school. You know, it'd be a middle of the pack enrollment in terms of the SVC. They had 2 7th grade and 2 8th grade basketball teams. Do you remember that, Shane?
And it's funny you say that because now they're having trouble some years having a freshman team just, 10 years later?
Their numbers were off the charts in high school. Man, they had to cut kids at freshman every year. They had plenty of kids.
Right.
You know, they had 2 7th grade teams and 2 8th grade teams. And they basically had a couple problems continuing that. One problem was some people didn't like the fact that they weren't winning junior high championships. You know, you had these parents and we're splitting the talent.
Got to hang those banners in the middle
school.
Quite
frankly, I mean, that's just pure idiotic to me. But
there wasn't room in that gym to hang any banners.
Yeah, no, not at the old Shade middle school. But no, but then the other one's a little more legitimate. Who do you schedule against? Because they were the only team that did it. You know, right. So I think there's where the league comes into play. You know, hey, if we want to do this as a league, if we want to get more numbers, how many schools might be able to do 2 7th grade and 2 8th grade teams?
Sure.
Don't cut it all. Don't cut anybody. And once that word gets out that you're not cutting, a lot of schools would be able to do two of each team. And then work it out to where you're maybe playing on the same night so your busing's no more. But that would have to be a league-wide thing. Otherwise, if one school tries that, then they don't have anyone to play against. You know. But those are some of the ideas, I think, that might be able to expand numbers across the board. But like I said, I really like this guy's way of thinking. It would take some work to pull it off. It would be a process. But never say never. I think it could happen if the right people put their minds to it.
Well, obviously a great discussion, and fans, you can get involved in the discussion, and please do call 740-569-3254 and let your voice be heard. Stay with us. On the other side of the break, we talk about a variety of SVC sports, and we tell you the keys to SVC titles this fall and even this winter as well. Well, fans, let me tell you a little bit about the website. Most of you, I'm sure, already know this, but it gives me a chance to give a shout out to some sponsors as well. You're going to want to check out all of our sports coverages, be it football, volleyball, soccer, cross country. We get them all involved, obviously golf. On most of our sports pages, you'll see our Valero SVC standings. Obviously, Valero offers us a little bit to eat, a little bit of gasoline all across the Cider Valley with South Paint, Kingston, Southeastern Valero, Bourneville, Valero on Western, Valero on Bridge. And as I've told you more than enough times on here, and Jeremy, you need to take note as well, as in case you have an upcoming trip out the Bainbridge way. You really, at the end of the night, need to get on the phone and be calling the Bourneville Valero and order you the $5 sub. Now, on my diet, I've been going just with the one, maybe like a ham and cheese mayo on the side. But if you go with a couple, if on the cheat night, so to speak, a lot of times I'll get me the pizza sub with the three meat topping and the ham and cheese, and that makes for a great meal. So make sure, SVC fans, you're always checking those out. There's no way you'll make a trip in the Cider Valley Conference without having a Valero nearby. And then, of course, we have our Good Health Chiropractic Center. That's Dr. Chris Good out on East 2nd Street here in Chillicothe. That's 773-GOOD, and that always gives us the scoreboard. You'll see all the scores and stats from every game. So obviously want to give them a quick mention, and that includes soccer, cross-country, and golf as well, as you'll see the different standings on there for golf. Soccer, who scores some of the goals that night, cross-country results as well. So I love fall season because there's always something going on. There's plenty to always be checking out on the site. Well, guys, we've reached the time to hurry things up a little. So, of course, I am meaning it is time for our two-minute drill. We'll have Jeremy take the lead again this week. We'll put Matt in the middle, and I will finish things up. So here we go. Let's go to the hurry-up offense.
What player or players will be carding the key rounds over the next few weeks that will decide this year's SVC champion in golf?
Well, I think Cooper, Miller, and Daly from Medina. It looks to me like if you can have three consistent golfers right around that 40 range and consistently staying there, it will give Medina the possibility of unseating Unioto and winning a SVC championship.
Well, I'll go opposite of you there. I guess the same holds true for Unioto. I think, I felt like, you know, this is Unioto's league still to take control of and win. Obviously the names like Calvin and Freeman and Brown jump out at you as three guys currently in the top 15 in the league. I think those are kids that, you know, Unioto's going to be counting on. But then obviously Unioto's depth comes into play. We talked about this and it proved true in the last match. Some of the key rounds might be those fourth, fifth golfers. I know Adina won a big tiebreaker last week that allowed them to hold their position, so to speak, in the ranking. So a lot of times it's those fifth, sixth kids that even come into play.
Well, guys, I think you both have the best two teams, maybe, but I think maybe you're not looking at it the right way. I think when we look at see who's going to win the whole thing, you may have to look to Piketon with Graham and Brewster, Moore and Meredith. You might have to look at Westfall with Patinsky and Chenoweth, Spicer, Green, maybe even down with Zane Trace, Arnold, Newman, Brower, Cheney, because what's going to happen, I think, Matt, you touched on it with the tiebreaker, there's going to be somewhere coming up, be it a Crown Hill, Big Beaver, Pickaway, JC's, where one of those top two teams with the parity in this year's league is going to slip to third or fourth, and that's going to be the round that ends up costing them the SVC title.
In this week's first release of the Dina Sports Medicine SVC Volleyball Stats, who or what jumped out at you as a difference maker in this year's league race to this point?
Well, as compared to what I've seen in person, it's what wasn't there. The most impressive player that I've seen thus far and the most impressive team were both missing. And with Amanda Curry at Westfall, she just is having a tremendous year. Phillips, Fox, Arledge, Tackett, Williams, Wallace, they're really playing elite volleyball right now. And with them missing from the statistics, I'm just interested in what some of their numbers are, because I was really impressed with Mustangs.
Well, definitely, Jeremy. Hopefully we can get those stats soon to be able to include one of the better teams in the league. One girl that jumped out at me was Lytle from Huntington. I know, obviously, from listening to you guys on past shows and just kind of following it, she's one of the best defenders in the league, and right now with 8.29 digs a game, almost two better than the Strasbourg girl from Zane Trace. I tell you, from people I've talked to, they're really, really impressed with this girl. I mean, they were last year, as a youngster, and now with a year under her belt, she's even better.
Well, guys, it was so hard to decide on this because really one of the fun things about doing the stats every year is you have four or five different things that jump out at you. One thing I love to look at is the assists, the difference between the 5-1 offense and the 6-2 offense, where you see obviously a Dawson or Ingram's going to be more toward the top. But if you look at the number that the Steinbrook girl at Uniota's putting up in the 6-2 offense at 6.6, that's incredible. The other thing that jumps out at me is the balance of a Haley Carl and a Kylan Strasbourg. You know, Matt, you mentioned the incredible digs number of Lytle, but Strasbourg in there right behind her. When in reality, you know, and Strasbourg's also a kid that can help you at the net. So just a lot of different things to look at. You know, I love to look at the aces up against the serve percentage to see the risk reward and the rally scoring. So I really encourage fans to get on there. It's really, if you kind of become a student of the game, it's really a fun page to look at.
What has been the biggest surprise through 2 weeks of high school football?
I'm going to go. I think it's been a little alarming to see how many points and how much yardage some of the defenses and leagues are allowing. And I know that's a result of strong opponents and some inexperience with some of our teams. But I really hope to see that controlled a little bit better this week, going into week three and preparing for the SVC.
Well, you know, from a positive side, I've got to say that I've been really surprised with Southeastern off to a 2-0 start. I got to admit, you know, privately, I really underestimated these guys. You know what I mean? You know, just in our discussions, in my discussions with other people, I just didn't think they would be all that good. But it shows my ignorance, really, because when I listen to some of the names that Coach Gallagher, who's doing an excellent job, was talking about on the post game shows the other night. You know, when you start throwing names out there like Des Perkins, Cannon Strasbourg, Jordan Allen, Abner kid at quarterback, you know, all of a sudden you've got some kids there that have played and are making plays. And I tell you, you know, they're off to a 2-0 start and they got a lot of excitement out there at Southeastern.
Well, Matt, I like what you're saying about the 2-0 Panthers. I mean, really, the 2-0 Bearcats I kind of expected at this point, although I will say I thought maybe Williamsburg would be one of the better teams they played all year. But, Jeremy, I'm going to piggyback off you a little bit here with the defensive comments, because I guess it kind of goes with what my original thought was when I read the question, was the lack of physicality that some of the league schools have had. And I think what's happened is we've had a lot of seniors at a lot of different schools. And I understand that some of the schedules are really tough, but as I've watched a couple SVC teams in person over the first couple weeks, I'm concerned a little bit about the physicality or lack thereof. And perhaps this is a year the league's starting to be considered down a little bit more because of all the youth that some teams are being forced to play that they haven't been forced to play in years past.
A fair, unfair question was in the inbox this week, saying that even though it is early, it's safe to say only one football team will make the postseason this year.
Well, due to the expansion of the playoff structure, I'll have to say unfair at this point. I think a lot remains to be seen when it comes to, you know, a 5-5 team making the playoffs in a given division. And I know you look at the Southeastern Panthers, as Matt was discussing, and they might be in the toughest region of all of our conference teams, so it might be a little more difficult for them. But I definitely think it's a little bit too early to go with just the one team.
Well, my first instinct was to kind of agree with that, Jeremy, but the more I looked at it, I honestly think it might be fair. I start looking at, obviously, you know, you have Paint Valley, who I think with the start they're off to, if they have the type of year they're expecting to have, especially in D7, you would expect them to make it. But after that, I don't know who else it would be unless it would be Southeastern. Now, I will say this. I think Southeastern goes 3-0. I think they beat Wellston Friday night and go 3-0. But what's going to happen is some of these teams that have these tough non-league schedule, whether it be a Zane Trace, Westfall, Uniota and Piketon are off to rough starts. If they go 0-3 in the non-league, all of a sudden now you get into league play and you just start kind of beating up on each other, and computer points tend to cancel each other out a little bit. So I don't know. I think it might be awfully difficult for two teams to get in this year.
Well, guys, I definitely think it's fair. I would have to go Paint Valley, and I guess people can accuse me of putting on my Homer hat here, but I just think the Bearcats, as I said before, Williamsburg I thought would be one of the toughest two or three teams they play. They get the key win on the road. Now you look at their schedule out in front of them. I understand Akron Centric was 0-10 last year. I start to look across the SBC a little bit down. Again, Piketon's probably going to go to 0-3 this week. Zane Trace a 1-2 or 0-3. Westfall probably 0-3, but all of those teams are capable. But with Paint Valley in D7, I think if they accidentally can get to 8-2, they're in. So I just look across the league, and I just don't know how many other teams, because of their non-league, are going to be able to get to that 7-win mark. And I think anytime you get down to 6-4, I think you have to have some pretty quality wins, and I just don't see those wins in the non-conference here in the SVC this year. Well, guys, as we get ready to wrap the show up this week, we look and I want to let everybody know what incredible feedback in the inbox. We took a couple there. I didn't get to all of them on that topic because we didn't want to overkill it this week. As that conversation continues to pick up momentum, we'll share different thoughts. Hopefully, we'll get some more phone calls. And I thought I would go a different route here as we look at our final look to the inbox. I do want to let people know the inbox is admin1@svcsportzone.com. Let them know that I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. And guys, the Shout-O-Matic feature's really taken off this year. I noticed on the numbers of people starting to follow there and listening, some of the different people that I've seen that have joined that, I appreciate that. But I do want to look into the inbox because there's one. We had a similar email in the fall last year, and this one I know is from a different person. But guys, it says, is it basketball season yet? You guys do a nice job acting like you need to give small fall sports some coverage. But be honest, we are all just passing the time until basketball season arrives. I say Uniota, Southeastern, Zane Trace, and boys, and Uniota rather easily in girls. I need you guys to give me some key things to look for, and how much is this new rule Matt described last week going to influence the league in your opinion? Thanks, and can't wait to listen to all the basketball coverage this winter. Well, Matt, since you were describing to us the some of the new workout rules and some different things, how much can that impact some of the teams maybe hitting the early part of the season, maybe a little closer to midseason form, or do you think we're looking into that a little too much there?
Well, I think, I don't know. This is the first year for it. We'll have to see. I think some schools will take advantage of it more than others and get their work in. Obviously the more you have your hands on the basketball in the fall, you're probably going to start practice a little bit more ready to go, and it's going to help your personal or individual development. But you still have the same issues. A lot of schools have kids playing football, volleyball, whatever the case may be. Cross country, golf, their time is taken up with other things, so they can't necessarily get in the gym and do these workouts all the time. So I really don't think you'll see a huge difference caused by that. I think you'll see, there'll be some individual players that it helps, but a lot of those individual players might already be some of your gym rats, so to speak, that are doing that all the time anyway. So I don't know. I don't know that you're going to see it affect the standings.
Jeremy, your take on that?
Yeah, I kind of agree with Matt there. I think the kids that want to make themselves better go to those, take steps to make sure that happens. Sometimes I worry that we continue to go out of our way to give kids an organized way to learn sports. And in a lot of ways, I think that's been the downfall. I think kids need to be a little more self-motivated and and be able to go with their friends and work out and make it really meaningful and not just another way that their coach or somebody else is kind of urging them to do something. You kind of want to see it on their own initiative. So I don't know that it'll have that big of an impact either.
Well, Jeremy, let me stay with you here because it was wanting us to make some comments here on some key things. I've heard of some different injury reports that do not sound good with Jenkins down at Piketon. That's obviously a storyline as Piketon, I think, is a lot of people's sleeper on the girls' side. Obviously, when it says Uniota rather easily, I've been so impressed with Taylor Overly's athleticism this year. You can tell 2 years removed from the knee injury, she's getting off the floor completely different in volleyball. I think you'll agree with that. Mm-hmm. But I think the key headline has to be Tori Cox. What can you tell us about her progress, and how confident do you feel in just 1 year removed from such a serious injury that she's going to be ready to go?
Well, you want to be cautiously optimistic, and I think that's where I fall. You know, just the maturity and the age maturity and the mental maturity of Tori, I think will show she's going to be much improved, even if her athleticism is limited. She didn't shrink, so she's still going to be a problem with her size, and I think everybody can attest to that. So even if she's a step slow, she's still going to block a lot of shots and still change a lot of offensive mindset for opposing teams. But in the same regard, I'd say, you know, there's a lot of Division III teams in our girls that are going to be really excited that there are three sectionals and some more postseason opportunities if they don't have a shot in the leg.
No doubt about it. Matt, I guess I'll pass the boys on to you. I know you usually do an incredible foundation game with Uniota, which preseason or not, usually a really entertaining basketball game to watch. And then I know you have the nearby rivalry with Southeastern. Are you still playing Zane Trace this year?
Yep. Yeah, we still take a big dose of the SVC's best, it seems like, every year.
Now, those three, Matt, I guess I would have to agree with the email. Obviously, we do preseason predictions on paper, and on paper, those three probably are the favorite. What's some of your thoughts off the top of your head when you think of those three really talented basketball teams coming back?
Well, I think they all have their different things that would make them attractive in terms of if you wanted them to be your league pick. You know, Southeastern has a wonderful team back in terms of their experience they've got back. The thing I like about Southeastern's talent is that roles seem to be pretty well defined already. And what I mean by that is, you know who your point guard is. Okay. Everybody knows it's going to be, you know, Dylan Miles. You know who your post kid is. You know who the kids are that you want shooting the basketball on the perimeter. You know who your kids are, like a Jordan Allen kid that's going to be a gutty, tough defender and just a guy that makes a lot of plays. Sometimes that makes it a little bit easier to coach, you know, when you have those roles defined, and especially for a new guy coming in, getting used to the program like Coach Cox is going to be doing. So I think Southeastern is going to be a really, really nice basketball team. Uniota, on the other hand, though, I think it'd be hard to argue that they have the most depth of talent in the league, probably. I mean, you're talking about
sure.
Coach Hoops can run probably 10 or 11 kids out there that are all athletic, all can play. You know, but again, there's some undefined roles there, I think. You know, who's going to play this position? Who's going to play that position? Who's going to take on this leadership role? Who's going to, you know, so there's a lot of things that he is going to have to help his team sort through along, you know, to organize that talent, so to speak, if that makes sense. And then you mentioned Zane Trace. I mean, you're talking about a team there that returns some really good players, obviously. You know, the Maori kid had a breakout year as a freshman. He's only going to be better. He's going to get bigger and stronger and continue to shoot the ball well, I'm sure. They're athletic inside with the Connor Smith kid. They still got good point guard play.
Hutton at the point, Henny there on the wing.
Last year, yeah. Henny on the wing. I mean, obviously the loss of West Beam hurts, but they still got the vast majority of their nucleus back from last year in a team that had a very, very good season. So I definitely think those three teams you would have to choose your league favorite out of them. I'll leave that to the experts. You're not going to hear me pick it, but I think it would come out of those three teams.
Well, I know I know in the girls, I take turds per season. In the volleyball, I know the Uniota folk not very happy with me. And then in basketball, I know the Zane Trace girls following. They think I'm a bit unfair to the dedication of those girls in the offseason. So I probably should leave the girls' chatter to Jeremy there. But no, I do agree with both of what you're saying. Unfortunately, in the SVC, on the girls' side, for whatever reason, it seems like every year we are talking injury. But again, it's because you have really talented players missing from the puzzle. It can't help but impact the league. And then Matt, I agree with everything you said there on the boys side. Should be really exciting. So fans, get involved. 740-569-3254. Let us know your thoughts on anything, everything SVC. So until next time, we're going to get out of here for the great people at the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, for Bruce Knox and the great people at DBK Media Services, for Jeremy Ward, for Matt Combs. This is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.